Yo, this is facts, not fiction. Without res, yeah.
Yeah, without reservation. Kicking the ballistic on the true history of Christopher Columbus, you know what I'm saying? He did us native people wrong, you know what I'm saying? What's but in 9-4, we just can't be having it no more, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, what's he up here, bro?
Was he a fool or was he a hero? The motherfucker lost and makes him a zero in my book. Cause of the lives he took, cause of the land he stole. All the hopes who gon' trick him, put him down in American mythology of a hero that never really could be.
Welcome to Indigenous Action, where we dig deep into critical issues impacting our communities throughout occupied America or Turtle Island. This is an autonomous, anti-colonial broadcast with unapologetic and claws-out analysis towards total liberation. So take your seat by this fire and may the bridges we burn together light our way.
I have to get to get blast your ass out of the atmosphere and yield to me. You can never be.
Was he a fool? Or was he a hero? Was he a fool? Or was he a hero?
So welcome everybody. Oka, Mush, Bonabella. You can call me Bon. My pronouns are they, them. And I am the host for the Beyond Indigenous Peoples Day episode here at Indigenous Action. Today, we're going to talk about what's really the pretty shallow recognition of what is known as Indigenous Peoples Day. And I know that I'm really excited to tear this apart with you all because in so-called Arizona, the governor just signed Indigenous Peoples Day into ordinance or proclamation or whatever those colonizer words are. And in one of the proclamations, one of the lines in the proclamations, it says that they recognize Indigenous people who shared their knowledge and land and its resources. So I'm pretty excited to talk about what these proclamations mean and what they don't really do otherwise than really just be a symbol of a neoliberal agenda. So with that, I'm going to first introduce our guest today, and then we'll go into some initial thoughts on the matter. So today we have Demian, Amra, Ann, and Makoon. So if y'all just want to take a second and introduce yourselves, and actually if we want to have Amra go last, and because they have to head out a little bit early today, and we'll just have Amra talk to us about what's going on with the Otham Anti-Border Collective and the resistance happening there, especially on the eve of such a triggering day for so many of us. I feel like the season from like now to like the end of the year is just so triggering for Indigenous people, because we have this farce of Indigenous Peoples Day and then Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas. But anywho, if we want to go ahead with introductions, and then we'll have Amra wrap up the introductions and talk a little bit about what's going on with their collective, and then we'll go ahead and continue the conversation.
My name is Ann Spice. I'm a Tlingit member of Kwanlin Dun First Nation, which is located, our traditional territory is located in Whitehorse, so-called Yukon. I have been out working as a land defender and a technical support person for Wet'suwet'en people in so-called Northern British Columbia for the past 5 years or so. And I'm currently chilling at home in the space that I grew up in southern so-called Alberta, on Treaty 7 territories, the Blackfoot, Blood, and Stoney Nakoda people. So I'm really happy to be joining this conversation today. Thank you.
Sango yuatatabai se nininahamakuna beben ne susone ne nashinabe ne banate ne Detroit biate. Hi, my name is Makoon. I'm from Detroit. I'm a Shoshone Bannock Anishinaabe Kwe. I use she, they pronouns, or preferably no pronouns. I don't fuck with English. yeah, I'm kicking it in Chicagoon right now, otherwise known as Settler Occupied Chicago. Yeah, I'm an artist. I do linguistic work mostly, and I'm trying to push a real land back mentality into the world.
So hello, everyone. My name is Amra Salomon, and I am a member of the Autumn Anti-Border Collective. My background is I'm mixed. I'm Akmal Autumn, Tana Autumn descendant, and Mexican and European. And I'm based in San Diego, California. And our collective is part of a larger movement called Defend Autumn Chovid, which is a land and water protection movement for Autumn peoples, for the Autumn homeland that we call Chovid. And we've been, for the last couple months, involved with protecting a sacred site to Hyachid Autumn peoples called Kitabakito Springs. And that is located right on the border in an area of the traditional Hyachid Autumn homelands that is occupied by the Organ Pipe Cactus National Monument. And this is unceded territory, but Hyachid Autumn peoples are one of the bands of Autumn that is not federally recognized. So the land was taken, became this national monument, this national park, and then also part of the territory that extends out to Yuma is occupied by the Barry Goldwater bombing range. And so Hyachid Autumn territory is under a lot of military colonial occupation by, you know, the military, literally, by the Air Force and by national parks and by the border. And during the coronavirus epidemic, the colonial government escalated their construction of the border wall across indigenous territories. And there's been a heightened the escalation of violence on the border against indigenous peoples, against indigenous land and water protectors. And so all of the border cross tribal nations are in some form of resistance to this, some more than others. But what Autumn land and water protectors have been doing is mostly women who are leading this movement have been going out and putting their bodies in front of the machines, trying to prevent the construction of the wall that is not only destroying, you know, they're literally blowing up burial grounds and sacred sites like Monument Hill, but they've also been extracting thousands of gallons of water a day from the groundwater, which is in some of these regions, the aquifers are non-replenishable. It's, you know, Sonora Desert is a pretty dry place. We've been in a drought for several years, and this extraction of the water is even impacting the springs in the area, the sacred sites such as Kitabakito. And so, you know, this particular spring is one of the only water sources for animals and people in about 40 miles in either direction. So it was imperative for people to go out and protect that sacred site and protect that water. And so there have been several arrests of our members who've been out there, you know, praying, holding ceremony, putting their bodies in front of these construction vehicles. The border wall construction man camps that popped up on Autumn territory to construct the wall brought coronavirus into the reservations and into the communities. So it's literally putting people's lives at risk, this construction. And on October 5th, a group of allies, about 25 people, including indigenous water protectors from other tribal nations, went out to Lukeville, Arizona, to block State Route 85, which leads near Puerto Blanco Road, which leads to the point of entry. So that they went out and blocked traffic from the United States going into Mexico. And they did that in order to demonstrate against the construction, against the desecration of Autumn land and the threat to Kitabakito Springs. And what happened was that a lot of white supremacists were on their way to Mexico to vacation and tried to run people over with their vehicles. There were several aggressive vehicles that tried to run into the crowd of Indigenous people and allies protecting the water. And we received hundreds, literally hundreds of death threats on our social media of white supremacists and Trump supporters demanding that we all be run over and that we all be killed so that white people could go to Mexico on vacation. You know, and so it was really ironic that they want to kill Indigenous people and our supporters so that they can cross a border, but they, you know, don't mind killing us and killing the environment and killing, you know, brown people migrating in the opposite direction in order to construct their wall. So the declaration at the same time of Indigenous Peoples Day happening, you know, next week in Arizona is really ironic because it's just, you know, how can you celebrate Indigenous communities and claim to be, you know, including our communities while hundreds of people are calling for us to be killed, while our sacred sites are being blown up, while our water sources are being desecrated. You know, and so that irony is not really lost on us. We know that it's a facade and that these, you know, inclusionary gestures to try to extract our culture, you know, and make us sort of parade around like, you know, this is like a cultural holiday, do nothing to stop the conditions of settler colonialism and of military occupation of Indigenous lands.
Well, thank you so much, Amra, for that update and insight into what's happening around the southern border, if you will. It's really hard to hear about these past and current actions of our Indigenous relatives defending land and resources. Meanwhile, we have a government, a state government that proclaims on this proclamation of Indigenous Peoples Day that we essentially are willingly sharing our knowledge of the land and resources when that's just so clearly not what's happening. And not only that, but to be facing death threats and to be almost killed by white supremacist trucks and cars is just very disheartening. While we have a state that obviously doesn't recognize our autonomy or sovereignty, I think that could be a good segue into just opening up this conversation to everybody else and just hearing what initial thoughts that come up when we think about these, like Amra said, like shallow gestures at recognition, at representation, and, you know, kind of like a lot of the national holidays or months, if you will, that, you know, this month is like Domestic Violence Awareness Month or this month is Native American Heritage Month. And then outside of that, it's pretty much like we don't exist except for on these special days. So, yeah, if people just want to share what your message is and what you think people really need to hear through all of the fog of these, you know, state-recognized holidays or attempts at building peace or whatever their intention is. People just wanted to share what what y'all think people really need to hear. That would be great.
I hate Indigenous Peoples Day. Like, straight up. It's so fucking stupid. It's so, I don't know if y'all use, like, Google Calendar or not, but, like, if you go to it right now, it says Indigenous Peoples Day and Columbus Day, and same day, in the same, like, time and shit like that. And, man, I wish these gestures went a lot farther than like liberals want to act like they do. Cause like, man, this day isn't helping me get any more money. It's not feeding my family. It's not helping my dad out. It's not really like putting me in any other real place, nor is it really giving any of us the like representation that we want, because it's like all a gesture, you know, within the confines of white supremacy and the Stedler Project. I hate that day. I'm still going to make a post with my Venmo and try to get rich, because like that's like one of those days where you can really tap into white people's guilt, which that's sick. We all deserve to get a bag. But like, yeah, it's a gesture. It doesn't do shit. It's not action.
Yate, my name is Demian Danette Yaje. I'm an artist, writer, poet, curator, and organizer. A few years ago, founded this initiative known as RISE, which stands for Radical Indigenous Survivance and Empowerment. And I am currently based out of Portland, Oregon, but I'm from Gallup, New Mexico, where I'm currently at right now. And a lot of the work that I do centers around creating spaces that amplify the voices of Indigenous, queer, two-spirit, trans, and feminist matriarchal voices. A lot of the work that I try to do is just remind people that this is a continual thing. It's not just one day. It's like every single fucking day. It's not just missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, two-spirit femmes day. It's like these things are happening on a continual basis. I mean, these are larger concerns that I think that don't only just apply to Indigenous people. It's also like Black communities, Brown communities, Jewish, queer communities all across the board. Like there's hyper marginalization and marginalization that just is like so suffocating and pervasive. And obviously these concerns need to be addressed in ways that exist outside of like the settler colonial infrastructure, governments, mindsets. And I think, you know, that's partially where a lot of us felt we were headed when the Black Lives Matter movement like picked up momentum. It was really hopeful. I mean, I was just on Instagram yesterday kind of looking at, you know, bullshit essentially, but, you know, had come across some protest videos off of Redfish Media's account of different types of protests that are happening around the world. And it just made me really sad that that moment that was so established, you know, back in May, just feels like so out of reach at this point. You know, I live in Portland, Oregon. There's just been, you know, numerous nights of civil unrest in that city, and the media has done a really, really good job of, you know, making Antifa or like anarchists these like bad people who are against essentially like white supremacy and violence and continued like police brutality and superiority. So it's just disheartening that, you know, even when it feels like we're making progress, the white supremacist brainwashing machine finds some way to reestablish itself and claim some sort of dominance, when really it's just this mechanism that is completely based out of fear and shame and ancestral trauma that doesn't want to even admit that they're wrong and the whole fucking thing is fabricated, and that's the only thing that they can fucking latch onto at this moment. Anyway, that's how I feel about it at this point.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear your perspective on, or your brief perspective on, like, what's considered progress and what can be coded as progress when we don't really see, like, a lot of follow-up happening. And I do have a question about that a little bit later on, so hopefully we can circle back to that. But I'd love to hear, Anne, your perspective on so-called Indigenous Peoples Day or so-called Columbus Day.
Sure. I think it's obviously an empty gesture, and that it all of these gestures, these attempts to raise awareness or visibility. I mean, it just seems so late for us to be still doing this performance of, that is just telling people we exist again. And that it kind of stops there, that's the place where it ends, is this like, well, Indigenous people exist. It's like, hi, here we are. There's no action suggested or recommended. And it's a technique of containment. And I see it really in a legacy of state techniques of containment, where Indigenous people are meant to exist in these little bubbles where we use safe words and don't, you know, shake anything up and don't challenge any of the structures that are continuing or dispossession. You know, as soon as we do that, then, you know, the state kind of like throw up their hands and say like, well, we tried, we had a day for you. You know, what do you actually want from us? When in actuality, all of our demands are really clear. I do want to like hold up the people who have organized to get rid of Columbus Day. I think that's worth doing. And that like, that should not be something that's celebrated by anyone, and that pushing against, the sort of holding up and, weird, respectful discourse around colonizers and murderers, I think is something that really needs, yeah, we need to dismantle that shit. I think just replacing it with another day that's for us, without sort of having action behind that, doesn't do a whole lot. And I think my perspective on this is really, I grew up in so-called Canada and have spent a lot of time up here working with Indigenous people who are resisting all sorts of extractive projects and destructive projects. And I've also spent time in Lenape Hoking in New York City, and the organizing there as well against Columbus Day and other sort of destructive impulses there as well. And I don't know, on this side, on the northern side of the border, this kind of politics around recognition and acknowledgement of Indigenous peoples has been going on for a really long time. And we get a lot of recognition in different ways. And in British Columbia, for example, where in this space that I'm sort of currently fighting, where Wet'suwet'en people have said no to a pipeline that is continuing to be constructed across Wet'suwet'en territory, regardless of the lack of consent for that project and the destruction that it's causing. In British Columbia, they, you know, have adopted a legislative motion to, you know, put the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People into legislation in this province. And so that, you know, that's a step beyond sort of just a day for Indigenous people. And despite that happening, the police still raided the Indigenous reoccupation at Gitumden Access Point and at Umstoten. So these things are still happening, despite the fact that they're playing this game around their recognition of Indigenous people. And so I think it's really worth looking at what the actions are that, you know, you can put a stamp on a day and say, this day is for you. But the actions of government and the things that they say outside of that space when they haven't like contained a little bubble where they're talking about how appreciative they are of Indigenous people, then they say things like, you know, well, we're coming into Wet'suwet'en territory whether you like it or not, because the rule of law applies. And so it's these other forms of violence. There are the spectacular forms of violence, like the ones that they used during the raid on Wet'suwet'en territories, or the two raids on Wet'suwet'en territories. And then there's the daily just ignorance around Indigenous life and disregard for Indigenous life that happens when they allow the bureaucratic and continued dispossession of Indigenous people through supporting these industries that are allowed to continue without consent to destroy Indigenous territories. So I think that, you know, people have a lot to prove if they actually do care about Indigenous people, and they have to go way beyond just these really, really bland and meaningless labels and attempts at recognition and acknowledgement. Because if that's, you know, if that's happening, and then underneath it all, there's just continued violence against Indigenous people, like what's happening on the southern border as well, then it doesn't mean anything to us.
I can definitely like reiterate that experience of like the militarized like observance of Indigenous people. And even on this, like the so-called Indigenous People's Day, 2 years ago, Indigenous people who took the streets here in so-called Flagstaff for wanting to point out what a farce it was, as we still have unsheltered relatives in the streets. We still have missing Indigenous women's and trans folks and femmes and two-spirit folks cases totally unlooked into by the police, and they're spraying like shit snow, water, fake snow on the sacred mountain here. And on that very day when Indigenous people took the streets to say that your recognition of us doesn't mean shit unless you actually do something, there were 13 of us who were cited for obstructing a public thoroughfare. So obviously, like you said, Anne, as long as we're easily digestible to white supremacy, then we're like not good Indigenous people. And we shouldn't get the kind of recognition that we have to get in the streets for. And so, yeah, I do want to, since both Demian and Anne kind of brought up this idea of wanting to celebrate, maybe celebrate isn't the right word, but just wanting to recognize like the efforts that, in my perspective, like neoliberals have took in order to gain this recognition of Indigenous People's Day. Because, you know, we see so much that our relatives get kind of caught up in these governmental systems that obviously weren't meant to help us in any way. And trying to use that system to better lives for Indigenous people. And so for myself, I see this effort to proclaim Indigenous People's Day. And I think about all the Indigenous people who have fought really hard so that day can be recognized by our forced upon governments. And it just makes me think about how we might want to just encourage people to like think critically about how they're participating in what they might see as liberation or steps towards liberation, but as we have all mentioned, isn't really backed up by any kind of meaningful action. And so I just wonder how we might want to be able to talk to our relatives who, you know, say the same things like, well, our ancestors fought for the vote, or, you know, our ancestors fought to be recognized by, you know, our certificates of Indian blood. And they, I could imagine them saying the same thing around Indigenous People's Day. Well, we fought so hard for that recognition. So don't like drag me for wanting to, you know, participate in this settler colonial project. So I just wonder how we can, you know, I guess like coexist with people who might not have the same, you know, claws out perspective on these hollow gestures and kind of how we can just talk about that openly.
I think we can recognize the diversity of tactics and still like demand more from people. Those things aren't mutually exclusive, you know? And I like want to point out something too, because you're talking about like our relatives that are like, oh, well, we really want to be, I mean, let's face it, it's still like being acknowledged by the settler state. And like, I mean, that's not land back. That's not like my goal. Like my goal is to like not live under the settler state. But I think that comes from that assimilation drive comes from a place of trauma and from like a need for safety. So like when we analyze that, I think it's really important to like bring up healing first in some of those conversations.
I think that same point comes up a lot when we think about, you know, our relatives who might leave their reservation because for whatever reason, it's not safe for them to be there. But then they get dragged for being an urban native or a bougie native or this and that. And so, yeah, I think kind of like just being mindful of like where everyone's at, but also like wanting to really like be like critical of how Indigenous people are expected to use so much of our lives and our energy to be recognized when we do, it's like just not even really backed up by anything meaningful. So yeah, it's kind of hard.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, if there are people who want to spend some of that time educating white people that we still exist, like I'm not gonna drag them for it, but I'm done. You know, like I don't want to do that anymore. And I think that to me, it also just seems like a real lack of imagination. Like I don't think that our ancestors were like what I want really is an Indigenous People's Day. You know, that's like not what they were imagining for us or for themselves. And so the piecemeal things that get doled out by the state as like crumbs for us, we shouldn't be satisfied with that. And I think that we also just have to recognize, when we do have ancestors and people in our families and relatives who really hold on to these pieces of recognition as something that like is indicative of some kind of progress. And I think it's worth recognizing like just some of the deep hopelessness that's settled in some of our communities. And sometimes it's hard for people to imagine getting more than that. And, that's hard, but I think instead of like kind of, I don't want to like slam all their efforts, but I do want people to imagine more than that. And also just to recognize that like the things that we've been demanding are pretty simple and that we should be making demands. So when we say that we want to be able to make decisions about our territories and have those decisions respected, that's not a complicated demand. And it's one that's been ignored like over and over and over again. And so I think alongside any sort of attempts at recognition, like we should be demanding more than that. And also saying that like your recognition doesn't mean shit if it doesn't come with other kinds of action. And part of what kind of backs that up as well is that the moments in especially the last few years where I've seen the most recognition from non-Indigenous people of the struggle that's been happening on Wet'suwet'en territories was when there was extreme state violence focused on us. And that was the moment where people stood up. They responded to the call to shut down Canada, and they actually shut that shit down. Blockaded railways and highways and bridges and took over rail yards and ports, and they actually put some action. And a lot of those movements were led by Indigenous people, but with a lot of other support. So there was a reciprocal reaction that happened that was in response to the violence that we had faced. And so, I mean, that tells me two things. That tells me that when there's a demand for action, that that's an important way to actually get action. We can't make these sort of really passive gestures and then expect people to respond to them. So no one's going to do anything like radical on Indigenous Peoples Day unless there's a demand to do something radical. So I think that we need to make demands. And then we also need to recognize that the recognition that we're getting is coming at a cost, that when we put our bodies on the line and there's these spectacular moments of violence, that we're really at risk during those moments. We're putting our lives and our freedom on the line, and people should react to that, but it shouldn't take that much. We shouldn't have to wait for, you know, us to be like staring down a sniper in order to get a reaction and get people to move for Indigenous liberation. And so, I mean, that frustrates me that that's what it takes to get us back in the news, you know, like that's what it took for Wet'suwet'en people to be back in the media cycle, was for us to face that kind of violence. And so that's frustrating. And I mean, it makes me sort of angry at some of the like more passive movements that they're not, you know, they're not making bigger demands. But I think that's one of the things that we can suggest for our relatives, right? There's that, you know, we can ask for more, and we should be continuing to ask for control of our territories and for action on the like ongoing genocide of Indigenous women, girls, Two-Spirit people. I mean, this is like really important stuff that needs concrete steps to be altering the way things are. And those concrete steps are nowhere near some of these just these other gestures that are just continue to be kind of empty.
Hell yeah. Fight fire with fire. Fuck being passive.
I know. I was just going to say, like, I'm going to totally use spectacular moments of violence in my vocabulary now. Like, yes, it is spectacular to see that. And absolutely. I mean, I hear that the call was, you know, answered by white accomplices. But like you said, why do we have to wait until like our lives are literally threatened, which they are every day? For them to stand up and do something. And that doesn't really even, you know, speak to just like the everyday activation that so many of us have to take so much time to like regulate. Like I know for me, it takes me like at least an hour every morning to just like regulate my nervous system so I can somehow coexist with whiteness. And that is going to like slowly but surely like take a toll on my life and other people's lives. And so like the threat isn't just like having a gun pointed at you. It's also just like in our everyday lived experiences. And so I just wanted to name that for our listeners and for folks who are hoping to be accomplices. Don't wait till our lives are threatened by the military or the police to step up and do something. You should be doing something on behalf of Black and Indigenous people every single day. That's concrete and actionable. So yeah, definitely always like take our lead and yeah, just support us every single day. But with that being said, I would love to hear Damien's thoughts on kind of how to coexist with Indigenous liberals, I guess.
I mean, you also have to take into consideration that you have to coexist with Indigenous conservatives as well, who probably think that assimilation is also traditional and ancestral, you know, to a certain degree. And that's problematic as fuck. Like, it's It's very problematic. My sister was just telling me about this video that Donald Trump Jr. reposted that was made from some natives, some Diné relatives, called A Long Walk in Socialism. And it's this, like, I don't know how long it is, like 14-minute video of these Diné members who are talking about how socialism is like ruining the reservation, and the reservation is like a very fine example of the failures of socialism. Which is just like so fucking whacked out, but like these people exist. Like, you know,
they're really out here saying assimilation is sacred.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past anyone, but to some certain, I don't mean to throw people under the rug in terms of like pushing natives to vote, but like my understanding is like indigenous people were forced to become citizens of the settler colonial state. Like by recognizing that it took us X amount of years to get to the point where we were able to vote is completely undermining and ignoring the fact that we spent like centuries trying to resist the settler colonial state, period. Like our livelihood, our survivability of our ancestors was like given no thought whatsoever. And I mean, that really angers me to a certain degree, because I remember somewhere deep inside of myself resisting the idea of even participating inside of the settler colonial nation state. And that transpires into my reality of wanting to imagine and build spaces where we don't have to have our future generations live underneath that same sort of imagination or simulation. 'Cause these are all simulations. And we're all like duped into participating in them, believing them. White people are like the most acceptable to them. They were the ones who were the architects of it. They will not back off from it. And it's just disheartening. I mean, we see it on our like personal IG accounts. We see it in, you know, IG accounts that have an enormous amount of followings, just the amount of hatred and anti-Native sentiment that gets spread. And that's only like a very small sliver of like what is actually out there. And so it's shitty, but I think, you know, we also have to be mindful that these sentiments also exist. Like these anti-Native sentiments, these colonized, self-colonized sentiments also exist within our communities. You know, CLE has done a really good job of, I made this print last year that said, listen to indigenous people. And CLE was one of the first people to respond that was, and their comment said, you know, oh, listen to the right indigenous people. And, you know, listen to like radical indigenous people, listen to indigenous people who are like trying to fuck shit up and not mess with like Western constructs. And I think, you know, we all need to be mindful of that going forward. And a lot of that, obviously, as the Black Lives Matter movement made apparent in trying to address like anti-blackness within our communities, a lot of it takes like talking to our family members and relatives, and going back home and having these conversations, which is going to be hard as fuck. But especially in the middle of a pandemic, like how do you fucking do this in the middle of a pandemic? But, you know, if we're going to get there at some point and take that like elderly knowledge with us, like we have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Kind of dovetailing off of what you're saying about, you know, us being in the middle of a pandemic and this day coming up and in just a couple days here. How would you all like to see that day go? Like, instead of just, you know, what we might have seen in past years, you know, this celebration of Indigenous people with dancing and music and art, which are the only ways that, you know, we really are seen depicted by the settler state. what do you all see as kind of like a subversive way to actually use days like this and kind of flip it into something radical, something that could actually have the potential to like get smashing, like tear shit down in a way that is like actionable and doesn't contribute to the continued like cultural genocide or cultural misrepresentation of Indigenous folks.
I mean, getting the land back would be fucking sick, but I don't know if that's going to be the thing that happens this Indigenous People's Day. I feel like in general, man, that's a hard question to answer like really concisely. Obviously, you just want, like, we just want people to do better. I think that's like everybody in this chat like wants that and like wants people to hold themselves accountable and stuff like that. I feel like I think something like I really want people to understand is like the multidimensionality of what indigeneity is and how like we aren't a monolithic group. And like even like in the confines of like Canada, so-called Canada, and the so-called like settler U.S. that like. Yo, this is just more than what people make it out to be. Like, it's something like I really think is a great starting point. Is like, yo, people got to figure that out, right? Does that make sense?
So, are you saying like people should spend more time understanding that indigeneity goes beyond what percentage of Indigenous blood you have, and actually, hell yeah. Like. Understanding like the full understanding like the life ways that are embedded in the earth and in the sky and in space and things like that.
Hell yeah, I just want it to be like more than just a gesture at this point. And I think like coming from a place of understanding, don't get me wrong, reconciliation has been dead, like I stand by that very firmly, but like I think like what would be helpful for rhetoric in general is just understanding that like, yo, this isn't a game, you know, this is our lives. This is like, this is our kinship. This is our community. This is our love. This is our rage. This is our hate. And like all of us are valid. And that's like a thing like the settler state just doesn't want, like it only wants to reward us if we assimilate. And like, that's not the game I don't think anyone here is trying to play, you know?
No, definitely not. Yeah, I think that, you know, I've been talking with accomplices and relatives a lot about that. And for me, what that looks like is, you know, just sending a really clear message to whatever space people occupy. To really, like I said, yeah, send the message that this like shallow gesture doesn't really mean anything. And like we saw happen 2 years ago on this day here in occupied Kinklane, folks getting in the streets and blocking traffic and using the day of what was supposed to be, you know, a celebration to actually come out and say, like, we actually don't really want your recognition. Like, we don't actually, like, we didn't even really ask for it. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in more, like, hearing more, like, I guess, tactical things that this day could be used for, like types of actions, if anyone had any ideas to share around things folks can do directly.
I think restoring equity is a really big part of this process, or like trying to establish it too. Like, I don't know. I mentioned that thing. Like, I put my Venmo out there every Indigenous People's Day because, like, I mean, fuck money, fuck capitalism, but that's like a way for me to like instill some safety in this world that's not safe for me. And I think like what equity can look like can be any number of things beyond gestures. And that's physically paying someone's rent, giving somebody food, giving somebody access to resources, giving somebody space, even giving somebody land, you know?
I'm interested to hear, as someone who has spent so much time on the front lines in Matsuinen, what Anne might think about how to kind of subvert Indigenous People's Day into something that might go beyond like mechanisms of like assimilation and celebration.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are things that are worth celebrating, and that it's also, we have to think about what's possible in a day, and that people's commitments to Indigenous people need to go beyond that frame. That said, there's been lots of days of action that have been supporting what's been happening on Wet'suwet'en territory, and you can get some shit done in a day. Pandemic makes it hard. There's been some online actions that people have taken. But I think part of it is getting really clear on who is responsible for Indigenous death right now, and taking a look at what's happening in these frontline movements. And who are the governments, the companies, the individuals responsible for continuing to destroy the land and water, which has this kind of everyday violence that is not as spectacular. It's hard to tell people about. People get tired of seeing footage of, you know, clear cuts, you know, and so there's this like barrage of like really depressing shit. As the company kind of pushes forward, and it's hard to continue to package that in ways that are going to spur on action. And I think for me, what would be a positive kind of recognition would be this recognition that we're out here doing the work on the daily basis, that the negative impacts of these projects are harming Indigenous people and killing Indigenous people on a daily basis, that, you know, people can't feed themselves because they can't hunt on the territories because there's so much traffic. And that daily grind, that daily violence is something that people need to recognize. They need to do that without the big spectacular show. And if that becomes motivation for people to act, then I would be satisfied with that. There needs to be some education that folks are taking so that they're able to understand what's happening. And that for a lot of these movements, I think this is the same for what's happening on the southern border wall, that people are putting a lot of work into public education. There's a lot of information out there about what's going on. You can look on Facebook and Instagram, and there's constant updates about what's happening on the ground. And so it's just kind of checking back into that, recognizing the work that's already being done to educate people about what we're facing. And then getting out there and going, you know, face to face, maybe metaphorically because of COVID, with the colonizers who are, you know, still like collecting their corporate profits from all of this. And there are all these contractors and subcontractors that are working for the Coastal GasLink Company. There's KKR, which is funding it. You know, there's like all sorts of this sort of apparatus that could be targeted if people are like paying attention to who it is that's actually sort of continuing this violence. And having spent a lot of time sort of gathering information and learning more about what this company is all about, they don't think they're doing anything wrong. And that might be a facade, but it's also just a really fucked up liberal thing where, you know, they're like, well, we did all the things on this checklist, and so we're good. And we really don't want to harm Indigenous people, so we're going to go around this little cultural site that you said that you don't want us to touch. We're happy to do that. You know, they're like all about these little mitigation measures that are like handing out little bits and pieces to try and placate people. And so I think they need to be reminded that they're the colonizer and that they are guilty and that they're complicit in a genocide and that, you know, they're the ones actually fueling this whole process. I don't think they're getting those reminders. And I think there's ways of doing that in person and online and making sure that other people know that these folks are plowing through Indigenous territories without consent, and they're threatening the river and they're threatening the wildlife and they're threatening, you know, Indigenous life on that territory. And those are actions that could take a lot of different forms. But on a sort of really basic level, just getting the word out, like, these are the companies responsible. These people are responsible and complicit and guilty. And I think that can go a long way when it comes to sort of looking at the riskiness of this project, because it is something that's facing significant resistance. And even if you're on the sort of weird ass liberal side of this, you know, it's not a good investment. And there's all sorts of reasons for that, and we can make them more clear.
Awesome. Thanks, Anne. Just want to give a quick plug for folks who are interested in learning more about what's happening in Wet'suwet'en. You can go to Indigenous Kinship Collective's website. They have an amazing syllabus of videos and articles and information that you can read and absorb and educate yourself on to understand some of the violence that's happening there to the people and in the earth. So just wanted to give that information so people can actually start to do some of this research and really understand what it's like to live kind of like in the trenches of white settler colonialism. But lastly, let's hear from Demian about some things that folks can do to kind of subvert that facade of Indigenous Peoples Day.
Well, you know, I think what Arne and McCune brought up, you know, I want to highlight that, underline it. But, you know, I don't know. I work, you know, with visual arts and poetry, and I think it can, we need people doing like all sorts of things, like hitting it from various angles. You know, if people want to continue to explain to people, make videos and meme slides that, you know, help non-Indigenous people understand like why this holiday is fucked up, why this day is fucked up, how it like infects like the general population and, you know, continues to program citizens into becoming patriots and nationalist zombies. You know, I feel like that's helpful. It's not work necessarily that I feel like I want to put much energy toward at this point. But it's work that needs to get done. It's work that, you know, younger Indigenous people like need to be made aware of and are being made aware of. It'll drive like the languages and spaces that we continue to evolve through going forward. But I just think people should, you know, in addition to making people more aware of extractive industries and companies that are like brutalizing the earth and communities and continuing these toxic legacies, you know, I think we also just need to take a moment and celebrate who we are and what we're doing and the fact that we survived. So I see that day as taking it completely off of the lens of what it actually is by like trying to pump as much like positive affirmation that like, you know, we survived this, like we are surviving, we are living examples that like no matter how many times, how many generations, how many decades, how many days, hours and seconds you try to eradicate us, like we are fucking resilient as cockroaches, like we are still here. So like You know, I think if anything's going to survive the apocalypse, it's like cockroaches and indigenous people, or brown and black communities. You know, like we're resilient. You know, we are tapped into something that white communities have spent like centuries trying to like distance themselves from, and it's the cosmos. It's like the sacredness of the earth. And so I think we should spend that day hitting it as many directions as we can. You know, and if you want to rest, if you just want to like go take care of yourself, have a little like self-care day, like not even like participate as an indigenous person, like that is your victory. Like you get to take care of yourself. But yeah, every native person should be pumping their Venmo, their Cash App, their PayPal. We should all be getting paid that day. Even if it's just to take care of ourselves, even if it's to send money back home, you know, we deserve a little goodness at least for 24 hours.
Definitely. I really actually love this mutual aiding that's happening through direct Venmos and Cash Apping, because as it were pre-pandemic, everyone or I think white people were really fed the idea that in order to be charitable to our lives, that they had to donate to and feed the nonprofit industrial complex, which none of that shit got to me. So if people who are listening listening today want to just go ahead and like actually directly support our lives, definitely find some people to Venmo and Cash App and PayPal and stuff like that. And there's also still like so much need in a lot of our areas for mutual aid. A lot of the reservations still need a lot of help and mutual aid. So go on to those pages and donate directly to those people organizing those efforts too. And I think we're almost ready to wrap up, but if anybody wanted to talk about how people could support not just you with your Venmo and Cash Apps, but maybe some of the work that you're doing outside of, you know, existing in that nonprofit industrial complex. How could they do that? And also, if you wanted to just make a quick comment about the nonprofit industrial complex, I would love, really, really love to hear y'all's thoughts. And just for our listeners too, we will be having an expanded episode on that, and hopefully coming up here pretty soon. But I think people need to get used to the idea that a nonprofit is actually not is an industry, and not something that is necessarily enriching for all Indigenous lives. So yeah, if we wanted to just maybe close out some thoughts about that, if you wanted to. And then also share ways to support your work and your organizations. Go ahead and let us know.
So first initial thought about like nonprofit industrial complex, nonprofits in general, you know, the revolution is going to have so many things. The liberation is going to have so many things. It's going to be full of like love, hate, anger, dialogue, healing, cooking, food, tons of cool shit. The revolution, like the one thing the revolution is not going to fucking have is 501c3o status. Like people need to get the fuck over that. Like nonprofits are, man, what problem is they really solving? Like I swear, if every establishment that was like involved in nonprofits wasn't on some shady shit, maybe we'd get some like progress going here. But like, as of right now, my living, breathing experience as Shoshone Bannock, Anishinaabe Kwe, living on Anishinaabe land, my ancestral land, like that stuff's really not doing anything for me. Like I'm still out here. I know the same for all of y'all. Like it's a gesture is like essentially my opinion on it. If that's cohesive and makes sense. Sorry, I get really hot about nonprofits really quickly. Cause it's kind of just like whenever people are like, well, this is doing that. It's basically them telling me vote with a heart. And that's like, I'm not allowed to vote. So like, I don't really know what that does for me. I don't know. That's stupid as hell. I'm excited for y'all's episode on this just because I think I know the people involved with it who are going to have lots of really cool things to say and a lot more personal perspective being involved in that industry and stuff like that. But yeah, that's my thought on nonprofits.
Well, yeah, I think I would love to have you back on for that episode if you're interested. And yeah, I think like just in the context of Indigenous Peoples Day, before we hear from our final thoughts from Demian and Anne, is that it's just so funny to me because nonprofits are set up really to kind of be like to fix what the settler colonial experiment has so broken. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still coded and funded by federal regulations and laws and grants and this and that. So if we really just wanted to actually like intervene on the violence that is a consequence of white settler colonialism, we just need to do away with that. And of course, I would say that for the most part, nonprofits are the most likely entities to celebrate state-sanctioned proclamations like Indigenous Peoples Day. When we know, at least I know after working in some nonprofits, that they're mostly employed by white people who have no experience actually with violence in the first place. Anyway, I could go on about that too. So we'll definitely have a longer episode about that. Oh yeah, I guess I meant like white people who haven't experienced violence are the people intervening in other people's situations of violence. So inherently they're perpetuating it even more. But yeah, so what a fucking shit show.
I just get frustrated by the existence of nonprofit of the 501c3 because I mean, you know, RISE is not a nonprofit. We're not a nonprofit organization. A lot of the funding we do, like we do on our own, you know, like, so I cannot like tell you how many times I've had conversations with people who are like, you would have more funders if you had a 501c3, if you had a nonprofit. And if white people or people who supposedly give a fuck about Indigenous people, like need a tax write-off or a 501c3 to like give us money to help us survive, you know, like that's crooked. Like that's really fucked up that we do not get the funding that we need to redistribute resources to like Indigenous, queer, trans, two-spirit, feminist, matriarchal voices because of the fact that we don't have a 501c3. I've been told numerous times by people that we would have so much more success. They would have more success reaching out to people if we had had that established. And so our only sort of like hope is to, what is it called when you get, when you have like a go-between for the 501c3?
I have no idea.
Bureaucracy? Shit, I don't know.
It's like you reach out to them like, and they like take them, they take on control of the money for you and then they write the check to you in order to redistribute the funds. Anyway, I forget what it's called.
Okay. Not stupid.
Anyway, it's messed up. And so, yeah, I mean, if white people and non-Indigenous people, you know, need that model in order to send money, in order to, like, help us survive, like, that's already, like, a messed up model. But I would love to hear more about I'm looking forward to that episode. We need to be having that conversation, especially because there's so many indigenous nonprofits out there who are just like collecting the money right now, and it's insane.
Sure. I think it's worth noting that even when there are nonprofits that are aligning themselves with the work that's being done on the ground, especially sort of frontline indigenous struggle, that they're not set up to respond in a timely way. And so when we really need help and we really need money because shit is going down, they like just bureaucratically can't respond in the way that's necessary. And so it has been individual donations and people hitting up PayPal and Venmo that has kind of kept people alive in the sort of aftermath of things happening on the territories. So, and it's been, a network of people who are redistributing money to people who need it in ways that we couldn't account for through a nonprofit. Because when it comes to the way that nonprofits distribute money, there's always strings attached. They always need to have their reporting done, and they want to send money for certain things and not for others. And so I think it really makes it difficult to use all the tactics that we need to use, because there's always this kind of policing about what is an appropriate use of money and what isn't. But the shit that really mattered, and it mattered to me and to people who I love, is that after we were arrested at gunpoint and then, spent a weekend in jail and got let out, and then hit a global pandemic, that like people needed support on an individual basis. We needed support at a time where we weren't doing shit because we were traumatized and depressed. And we couldn't have gotten money through a nonprofit in that moment. And the personal donations and people reaching out on a personal level to the land defenders who were involved in that, that shit kept people alive in that moment. And I think that it's really important to continue doing that. And that when you give money to the Unistoten camp, and when you give money to the Wet'suwet'en checkpoint, the access point at Gidimdan, that the people who are sort of controlling that aspect as well are redistributing it to land defenders. So it's not like that somehow it just gets held in some sort of nonprofit bubble. It's a community and we're taking care of each other. So if people do want to support the work that's happening, and make sure that money is going kind of like directly to what's happening on the front lines. There's a bunch of different places where you can look for that. There's unistoten.camp, that's unistoten.camp. That's the website where you can donate to Unistoten and see what's happening there. Unistoten Camp Facebook page has information about what's happening on that territory. There's also the Wet'suwet'en Access Point at Gidimdan Facebook page, and then Wet'suwet'en _ checkpoint. So Wet'suwet'en is spelled Wet'suwet'en _ checkpoint. And that that's the Instagram page. So you'll find more information there about what's happening with the Gidimdan clan on Wet'suwet'en territory. So you can look at those. There's sort of portals to donate through those spaces if people are interested in supporting work in that way. And then also just keeping eyes on the ground about what's happening. This company, this Coastal GasLink pipeline, is doing a whole bunch of preparation to clear the right of way for the pipeline, and also preparing to set up to drill underneath the river, which is the headwaters of the Wet'suwet'en and feeds a whole bunch of other territories. So just keep eyes on and support in whatever way you're able to, and just continue to spread the word as stuff is happening on the front line. That's always appreciated.
All right. Well, huge, huge thank you to our guests for spending their time with us here at Indigenous Action today. And folks have been called to mobilize these on-the-ground actions happening across Turtle Island on Indigenous People's Day of Rage. And that would be the day before the state recognized Indigenous People's Day. And to check out the call and see where folks were holding it down, go to IndigenousPeoplesDayOfRage.org. And for those of you, for our listeners today who are interested in learning more about the limitations of Indigenous Peoples Day, highly, highly encourage y'all to go to IndigenousAction.org and read the zine that was written in 2017 called Uprooting Colonialism. So music that we heard today on this episode was by Without Reservation, and the song was called Was He a Fool? And that song was written in 1994. So you can find this broadcast on any of the usual podcast platforms or at indigenousaction.org. Feel free to email us pics of burning cop cars, any questions or topics you'd like to hear us go claws out on at aiinfo@protonmail.com.